When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona.
And this is the Two Matts for the week ending Friday, the 6th of October. Matt, what did we talk about this week?
Well, the first half we talked about Rishi Sunak and his attempts to upgrade himself as C3PM. And we're looking forward to how that goes. So we kicked about that about. And then I have to say, I think we moved up a gear this week, actually.
I think we should consider changing the whole bloody format, to be
honest. We got into really deep philosophical waters about sharks,
electrocution,
and
death row
AI. Yeah. It was a very deep, honestly, it was a landmark podcast episode.
Do you think we should go into the, we might get higher up in the chart if we were in the philosophy category as well.
I think we might get into the philosophy game.
Much competition in the news podcast game now. We're going to shift to the two philosophers.
Yeah. No, I mean, we obviously have a talent. I think, as listeners will are about to discover, our métier.
That's it. Okay, so it's great fun, and I hope you enjoy it, folks. So this is the Two Matts, episode 16.
Called?
What are we going to call it?
Either the shark episode.
The one with the shark. The one with the shark.
Love it.
Enjoy. So, Matt, what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, I think inescapably we have to talk about Rishi Sunak, the change maker, the fire starter, who in Manchester promised to a complete upgrade of the Tory party and by implication that, well, thank God, a grateful nation takes the knee. Thank you, Rishi. But for those listeners lucky enough to have escaped this, we're now going to inflict a quick clip.
Forgive us, Prime Minister.
Today we set a course for our education system that will set our children up for the opportunities of the future. No more rip-off degrees, no more low aspiration, no more denigration of technical education, just the best education system in the Western world. We will be bold, we will be radical, we will face resistance and we will meet it. We will give the country what it so sorely needs and yet too often has been denied, a government prepared to make long-term decisions so that we can build a brighter future for everyone. Be in no doubt, it is time for a change, and we are it. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, so that gives you an idea of what he was saying, which is he's running as a change candidate in the coming election, which is mad. Obviously very difficult if you represent the party that's been in power for 13 years.
So let's pause there for a second, because that is the narrative everybody has been saying. But what's the counter-narrative that someone's telling him this? Why does this make sense?
Well, I did some calls after the speech, just because it was so ludicrous, it seems to me. You know, he's been a minister since 2018, right? And prime minister for nearly a year, and he's at the tail end, it would appear, of a long Tory era that started in 2010. How can you possibly persuade anyone that you're the change candidate? And the argument that came back was interesting, if not entirely watertight, which is that their polls, they say, you always have to be a bit health warning on this. Their polls say that Sunak is polling ahead of the Tory party, which I imagine is not very hard.
Yeah.
I mean, Lettuce is maybe polling ahead of the Tory party now. Yeah. However, so they want a presidential style campaign. And they think, and I'm not sure this is correct, but they think that Sunak versus Starmer, as opposed to Labour versus Tories, gives them a shot.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, that as a former betting person, you can see the odds certainly being more favourable for a Sunak versus Starmer shoot-off versus, you know, because Labour have consistently polled, you know, 20 points ahead of the Tories now for, for quite a long time, haven't they?
It is interesting that there was, you know, his wife gave a very gracious introduction to her before he spoke, and she referred to his youth. That was no accident. You know, Sunak is still very young. He's 43. Versus Keir Starmer, who's 61.
Do you know what? That, you just saying that... obviously, I listen to these things as a punter quite often as well, and it's only just dawned on me, foolishly, that that was a play. And because when she said, oh, I can hardly call him young anymore, of a man in his 40s, I, of course, thought, well, of course he's still young. You know, and so, I was being cleverly played.
So what they'll do is they'll play on Starmer as a sort of representative. There was a very interesting phrase in the speech, which didn't get picked up. Sunak referred to the permanent state, which is pure American MAGA. It's just one north of deep state. And I think they'll present Starmer, which is correct factually, as the former director of public prosecutions, as someone who's steeped in the kind of what this new 30-year consensus that Sunak claims to be trying to defeat.
Well, you talk to me. You in your fantastic New European hot take yesterday, you brought this up about what happened. What 30 years ago? Where
I'm
does that
baffled
come from?
Because 30 years ago is 1993.
Yeah,
which sort of gets you into early Britpop. It's the year.
So he's like 14.
Or 13.
Like
he goes to Winchester College in that year.
Yeah,
But he acts as if he and the whole nation suddenly suffered a great trauma.
That's
in 1993, and ever since then, you know, it's 30 years of hurt, isn't it?
Yeah,
I can't really understand why 30. I mean, obviously, he wanted to incorporate Labour so that he wasn't just rebelling against his own fellow
Conservatives. Well, I misheard him at first and thought he'd said 13, which would make absolute sense. Because that's the length of the Tory rule.
He was trying to imply, but it goes back to John Major, which is bizarre. John Major's already been in power in 93 for 3 years. And that is the date when it all started to go wrong, apparently, which is strange. And I can't offer any more analysis than that because I think it was just a figure plucked from the air to bring in Labour, you know, the 13 years of Labour. I mean, I think the problem he's got is, like, there are manifold problems, but in a way, stepping back, the biggest is that there is this huge problem which Gordon Brown faced in 2007, which is how do you renew an office? It's really hard. I mean, renewing an opposition is hard enough, but when you're in office, it's really difficult. And David Miliband and Gordon Brown sort of fought this barely concealed feud when Miliband was Foreign Secretary in the Brown administration over who was best placed to be that the incarnation of renewal of office, in office. And it didn't work. You know, they lost in 2010. So Sunak it's a very big ask. And I personally don't think that he in any way, shape or form looks like or sounds like a change candidate.
No.
I mean, the message he was bringing in Manchester was quite thin, really. I mean, the main element in it was, we're not going to do HS2. You know, then there was a re-announcement of the net zero stuff. There was stuff about education, which we all know won't happen on his watch, and a very personal, eccentric anti-smoking proposal, which everyone, I think, can kind of line up behind on preventive medicine grounds. But you sort of thought, why is this guy coming up with this right now?
Yeah. Because that will there's a certain faction in the Tory party
who
will just say the hell with that. Well, people should be able to do what they want.
Clearly well-sourced reports in the papers today, Thursday, saying that Liz Truss is furious. And also he's arguing against himself, Sunak, because he himself shelved the ban on 2-for-1 junk food.
That's right.
You know, why is obesity okay?
So he sort of challenged that, didn't he? He was challenged on the Today programme this morning. We're recording this on Thursday. And Robbo said to him, sorry, a bit over-familiar there, to the great Nick Robinson.
That's media talk, folks.
Nick Robinson said to him, you know, what's the difference? And he said, well, there is a clear difference. You know, it's like chemically addictive and so on and so forth. But actually, when you look at the two challenges, if you're talking about them as a health challenge, there's no profound difference.
Not at all. And I mean, that's what made me think this is quite arbitrary. It's obviously, smoking is the kind of thing that someone, I'm sure, thinks that smoking is, you know, rather low life and just horrible. And it is a horrible habit. But somehow watching him on stage saying that, I did wonder, if I was the parent of a child who's not struggling on, you know, the bread line, or I was worrying about how I'm going to pay my fuel bills this winter, and I see a multimillionaire prime minister, the richest MP in the country, who's been introduced by his billionaire wife, telling me, you know, that there's going to be restrictions on having a crafty burn if you're in your teens, I'm not sure I'd respond that well.
That pissed me off as well. But, well, before we skip over it, is being lectured by the daughter of a billionaire about inspiration and aspiration, and the, you know, hoping that the whole nation would have the same opportunities that her daughter has. Fiona Miller, education expert and writer for The Guardian and occasionally for The New European, made the point, well, that would be at least four times the education budget right now if you came close to giving everybody those opportunities. So this kind of paternalistic, very patronising delivery, I thought, about how I've arrived and my background gives me the credential to solve the UK's problems. I was sitting there thinking, your background eradicates the potential to solve the problems because you haven't got a bloody clue what real life is like.
It's a problem to be solved. It's an exam question for
exactly.
You know, so we read about his addiction to spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Don't try them, kids. They're dangerous.
They should ban that. Addictive. They should ban them from 14-year-olds.
Ban spreadsheets and news agents. and that, you know, his Treasury officials are sort of overawed by this. But in fact, it tells you a great deal about how he sees everything, which is we're all just data to his, you know, very mechanical, economistic mind. We're all just things to be, bets to take, funds to be hedged. You know, that's the way he sees the world. He can't help it. That's what he's been doing since he left university. And it shows because, you know, rich people can be good populists. I mean, Trump won a presidential election. He thinks he won too.
Yeah.
You know, his kind of vulgar richness does reach out because Trump is the kind of rich person that impoverished people would like to be.
Yes.
Sunak is a reminder of why people hate the rich when they show off too much with his Bluetooth mug and his heated swimming pool.
That's
and
right.
It just doesn't work. And I think that it will be an issue. That's not necessarily articulated. I don't suppose many voters will go to the polling booths thinking, I'm not going to vote Tory because Rishi Sunak is married to a billionaire heiress.
But they won't connect with him. That's the
because
thing.
He doesn't connect.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that his whole manner is that he's waiting at the end of every sentence in interviews as well as, you know, speeches for an applause line.
I've never heard anybody occupying that position or even any of the Secretary of State positions or anything being quite so brittle under moderate interview pressure. You know, the way he snaps back and he can't wait to say his point and he can't wait to tell you why you're wrong and he's right. And he can't wait to somehow articulate the cleverness of his position and the rightness of his position. And there's an utter absence of humility in him. He's
very much so.
I can't remember who said that he dripped with vanity, but it's absolutely true. You know?
And he's got this new formula, which is essentially, well, what would you do?
Yeah.
So after net zero, he said, it's for others to say how they would, you know, explain to people they're going to have to pay £5,000, £10,000, £15,000.
That's right.
This mythical number that's been plucked out of the air.
Yeah.
And in the Today programme interview we've been talking about, you know, he was sharp when challenged on the scrapping of the northern part of HS2 and said, you know, well, what would these people do about the schemes I've come up with that I'm proposing instead amounting to £36 billion, he said out
so
of his mouth.
That is the key word, is the I. The constant, you listen to him. There's never a, this is what we are doing. Nope. This is what my team, nope. This is what the cabinet has decided. It's all the decision I have taken. I am going to do this. I am going to say this. I have decided and I am going to solve the problem. There's a bit of a messiah complex
there.
There
is. And there's also quite a bit of tension between him and the party.
I can imagine.
They gave him a reasonable reception.
Yeah,
in Manchester. But the truth is that there's a lot of anger in the membership of the Tory party that they weren't given a say on his final successful leadership bid.
Yeah.
And remember, they chose Liz Truss over him in 2022,
That's right.
first time out of the asking. And she was a huge star at the party conference, which tells you so much that is unbelievable, both about her and the party.
Do you think there's... I mean, this is a knowable question, and it's a tough one to ask. He keeps saying, you know, I'm the first prime minister from an ethnic minority, and the great thing about
that is...
Because Disraeli, of course, Jewish. But he makes the point that the greatest thing about that is it's no big deal. And I wonder whether that's true, actually. I wonder whether within the Conservative Party... Is it still a little bit racist? Is there an undercurrent of
more than a little bit racist? Yeah. I mean, there's a kind of brazenness to a lot of the claims we heard in Manchester. When Kemi Badenoch says that Britain is the best country in the world to be a black person, I'm not a black person, so I can't, you know, comment on that. Yeah. But other people of colour have commented and said, "Are you kidding?"
Yeah.
Or it's not as good as being a white person, which is, of course, the correct metric.
Yeah.
Look, the Tory party is still, at minimum, a nativist party. Now, in the old sort of One Nation Tory days, that was very subterranean most of the time. You know, when Enoch Powell gave his Rivers of Blood speech in 1968, he was a member of the Shadow Cabinet and he was sacked immediately.
Yeah.
And that set a sort of barrier beyond which no one on either in either party, by the way, you know, was felt it was safe to go.
I hadn't appreciated that his ousting then was an immediate and direct consequence of that speech.
He's just got rid of him immediately,
which shows you, doesn't it, just how things have changed.
Yes.
We think that we have become much more progressive, you've got Suella Braverman saying effectively exactly the same thing, and not only tolerated but being scared of, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean. Look, Sunak got the leadership because of Suella Braverman. Mm. There's no question. On that weird Sunday in October when Boris Johnson was going to try and come back and run for the leadership, it was Suella Braverman's decision on the Sunday to say, "I'm for Rishi."
Yeah.
That got her her job back as Home Secretary and locked her in. I mean, people say she might be moved in the reshuffle. I'd be very surprised because she... doesn't quite own Sunak, but she's got a huge amount of power. And also, the party like what she's saying, I'm afraid. I mean, that all that language, invasion, you know, that it's a existential challenge, she said in the Washington speech that caused so much trouble.
Yeah, the hurricane of...
The hurricane of immigration. Yeah. You know, these are very dangerous...
Yeah.
Words. I mean, everyone of any decency knows that the language you use in this context, in particular, has... real world consequences.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen them. You know, we've seen a rise in... It was interesting. Braverman in her speech said she referred to Islamic terrorism, which is still, an MI5's annual report confirms this, it is still the main threat. But she didn't refer to the growing threat from far-right terrorism in the UK, which is a serious issue.
Right.
And a growing one. Now, it would be absolutely wrong to say it's directly Suella Braverman's fault that is so.
Mm.
But the problem is you create a permissive environment where it suddenly becomes possible to say the next worst thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the Home Secretary is using that kind of language.
Yeah. This brings me to another character flaw, I think, of Sunak, which is that I think he's a coward. And I think when he was pressed this morning on the radio about, do you agree with her words about immigration, you talk about diversity and the dreams of coming to the UK, that you both sets of parents, Suella Braverman's parents and Rishi Sunak's parents, held and came to this country and thrived and prospered. And what's the difference between somebody in Tunisia wanting to
come on a boat
or on a boat, you know, in terms of the dream, what's the difference? And which of you is right, Suella Braverman or you, Rishi Sunak? And he said, well, you know, he couldn't answer the question. And it's clear that he has a different view. That's patently obvious, I think. But he hasn't got the courage to say, she shouldn't talk like that. It's inflammatory and unhelpful.
I think privately he does.
Yeah.
But I think he's also quite happy for her to be an outlier.
Yeah.
Saying these things and appealing to the party base. Because, you know... one way of configuring all this, one way of framing it, is that Sunak does not want to go down to a disastrous defeat, as John Major did in 97, for example.
Yeah.
Or Corbyn did in 2019. You know, he doesn't want to be the Corbyn of modern Toryism. And so shoring up the base which is exactly what a figure like Suella Braverman does, is very much to his advantage. Also, Sunak is a very cynical user of culture wars. I mean, during the leadership contests in 2022, he said often that the only thing he objected to about the Rwanda policy was it wasn't tough enough and he would do more of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, hence in the speech, the line about we'll do whatever it takes to enact that policy, which is code for if I have to, we will leave the European Convention on Human Rights, which is is total catnip to Tory members. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, it's totally morally wrong, but also completely incompatible with the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah.
But he's throwing out these bits of red meat. Yeah.
And he is prepared to double down on somebody else's badness just to say, hey, look at me, I'm like that. It reminds me a bit bizarrely when we think about that. I don't know if you remember when Rebecca Brooks or Rebecca Wade, as she was at the time, became the editor of the Sun newspaper, and everybody said, oh, this will be the end of the Page Three girls. You know, there won't be any naked boobs in national newspapers now. Thank God. You know, we've got a woman at the helm. And on her first day, she came in with a big badge saying, I love Page Three.
Double down.
And it's double down on where people think you're negative. The theory goes, well, I'm going to double down on that because that's a small issue. But the bigger issue is I need to seem strong and independent minded. And I think that's what he's obviously trying to do. But he can't pull it off because he doesn't look or sound strong.
The politics of racism are complicated too, because it is patronising to suggest that a person of colour is incapable of saying things which will be, you know, harmful to other people of colour.
Yes.
I mean, everyone has free will.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought, much as I disliked intensely her policies, which now seem quite moderate compared to Suella Braverman's, when Priti Patel would say, you know, hang on a minute, just because of my background doesn't mean that I'm in favour of open borders. Well, that's a fair point.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But you're still wrong.
Yeah. Talking about the politics of racism, Nigel Farage was floating around conspicuously.
More than floating around, I think. I mean, it was fascinating, the conference in that, because Sunak was not in command and control of this conference at all. I mean, first of all, there was the total disarray over HS2, which quite unnecessarily dominated the whole conference. And the second thing was that there was this kind of carnival sideshows going on everywhere. You know, Liz Truss's fringe event was a massive hit.
Yeah.
Farage was all over the place, doubling up as a GB News anchor, host, sort of R. Tucker Carlson, but also as a kind of guru. And to the point where when Sunak was asked, would you let Farage back into the party? You know, given the damage that Farage did to the Tory party in all sorts of ways, you'd have thought the answer is no.
Mm.
But he said, oh, you know, I welcome back anyone who shares our ideals, which, of course, was an underarm ball to Farage, who was then asked about it, and he was able to sharply decline this offer.
Well, he sort of said, well, when the Tory party lives up to my ideals, then I'll come back in.
I mean, I think we've said this before, but he is a hugely consequential figure.
Well, also, let's say through gritted teeth as well, acknowledge, because it's important not to underestimate people, he is an enormously talented communicator.
He understands modern politics a lot better.
I've seen him handle all sorts of people from Owen Jones to Piers Morgan or, you know, whoever in interview. And I've rarely seen anybody get the better of him when it comes to him getting his message across and appealing to who he wants to. And I thought he, from that point of view, this week, I think he sent so many dog whistles out that, you know, the whole place was barking for it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he's a one-man ginger group. He sort of sets the terrain.
Yeah.
So he did for Brexit, and he's doing it now on net zero. He's been at the net zero thing for years and asked for a referendum on net zero, you know, quite a while ago. And at the time, people said, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, what's he on about? And here we are. What is the first thing that Sunak does as part of his rebranding is he goes soft on net zero. It's a very interesting trajectory from Farage's mouth to Tory policy. It's a contracting distance.
Yeah.
He's a very, very clever and astute politician. And he understands, you're right, he understands how to deal with people from all backgrounds. I remember when he started to really make an impression, one of the senior Cameroons, this is back in the coalition days, said to me, oh, Christ, he's like a nationalist Ken Clark. And that's, you know, that's not a bad way of describing him, because he has that sort of blokeish, cigar smoking, you know, likes a tipple thing.
Affability.
Yeah, you know, and I actually don't think he's particularly pleasant, but I think he's very good at wearing a pleasant face.
Yeah.
And he has that sort of TV, he's, you know, the speed with which he's taken to TV presenting is really impressive.
I think he's, I mean, clearly very clever and very accomplished and very devious little bastard as well. And
yeah.
Now, so it does, let's explore, throw things a little bit further forward and ask ourselves, like, a question that would have seemed absurd 5 years ago. But is it possible, do you think, Farage re-enters the Tory party? That's definitely possible. Gets a safe seat somewhere. That's definitely possible. Enters the shadow cabinet under Keir Starmer, Labour government, and is seen as the great hope for a resurgent Tory party on the right wing of British politics.
Look,
and even goes on to enter Downing Street.
Since I saw Trump coming down a golden escalator in 2015, I've stopped using the word never.
Yeah.
There are two reasons why that's, if not probable, entirely plausible. The first is that Farage is incredibly nimble. You know, he's had more parties than he's had hot dinners. He moves the air around himself to fit the time, you know, and the need and the message he's trying to. And he has completely understood that the next phase of conservatism is going to be, for want of a better word, MAGA UK. And that's his brand. You know, he invented that. Hence the kind of how the way he was almost revered as a guru in Manchester at the Tory conference. So he's chiming with where they're going to be at, assuming they lose. And also, he's still around. He's very powerful. They'll be wanting to eat energy bars, you know, after what may be a drubbing, who knows. But they'll be looking around for things they can do that show that they are fortifying and recuperating and growing.
Yeah.
So I rule nothing out.
And the other thing I think he's got on his side in terms of that being a possibility is that all the bad stuff's already priced in.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing, it's very hard to imagine there's any more crap going to come out about Farage. We've heard it all. We know what he is. You know, if you like him, you love him for the reasons that you've already articulated, the affability and all the blokishness. If you hate him, you hate him for the same sort of reasons, the populism and the shenanigans and the devious nature of his communications. But it's already all priced
all
in. So if he's there as a candidate, soiled as he is, he might be a better bet for a Tory party to present to the nation a leader than a Suella Braverman or
and
a, you know,
it's quite else. Quite possible. And also it would become a lot more feasible if Trump wins next November.
Exactly right.
Because he's genuinely, you know, in with Trump.
Exactly right.
And in with Steve Bannon, Trump's former strategist, chief strategist, who's not quite as influential with Trump anymore, but
yeah.
he is absolutely crucial to this sort of global network. And I think that what... Farage is—he's like the facehugger in Alien. He leaps on movements and makes them his own. So, could he do that to a defeated Tory party? It's entirely possible. And now, if you asked the current cabinet if that was possible, they'd all deny it strongly and say it was an outrage. You know, he's just a jester.
It's
not going to happen.
Yeah.
But you know, if politics since Trump and Brexit has taught us one thing, it's that it is very foolish to rule out something that just looks like it, you know, it has a whisper of possibility about it.
Yeah.
It's all to do with taking an opportunity. And certainly the Tory party after an election defeat, and it's already acting, by the way, as if it's been defeated.
That's right.
This was like an opposition conference.
That's right.
Will be very, very vulnerable to that sort of attack by a viral entity, if
That's
you
right.
like.
I read somebody talking about, you know, the big problem the Labour Party had in the time of militant, you know, when I was growing up in Liverpool especially, you know, was this entryism.
Yes.
And now, of course, and with Corbyn, of course, you know, that was the accusation that facilitated entryism of a much harder left spectrum. But it seems like it's a Tory party problem now that there's an entryist prospect from a far right candidate.
Yes, and I think also that you know, one thing Boris Johnson did in 2019 before he won the general election was he purged all of the old One Nation moderate Tories. They've all gone.
Yeah.
So with a couple of exceptions. But I mean, it really is a party that is now in Farage's image. It's almost like he doesn't even have to be entryist.
Yeah.
You know, because he's no longer...
It's like the Tories have entered Farage.
Right. Yeah, they've gone to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did think it was just so interesting. That horrific, you know, scour your eyes with Dettol image of him disco dancing with Priti Patel to I Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. That was a moment. It was a moment because they had a former Home Secretary who harbours leadership ambitions herself dancing derangedly with Farage. And everyone's having a great time.
Where was Penny Morden with her bloody big sword at that time when we could have used it?
Yes, and, you know, poor Penny Morden, she gave a slightly strange
speech.
It
was slightly overdone, wasn't it?
It was a bit. It was a bit Henry V.
It wasn't just slightly overdone. It was hammed up beyond all. It was like hammed up like a pig farm.
Al Pacino in any given Sunday, you know. I mean, it's interesting because I think that bad contexts make for bad decisions.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there, thank God. Yeah. But looking from a safe distance in the metaphorical bunker, you could kind of sense a kind of air of collective lunacy descending upon the party, which often happens before a party loses power in a big way.
Reminded me of a bit of a kid's fancy dress party, where everybody playing a part, you know, like she was doing a sort of sixth form amdram thing and had got it hopelessly wrong. Liz was doing her I'm going to be a debating queen, and he was doing his kind of sixth form dissertation on why politics must change. You know, where are the bloody adults?
Physics revision notes.
Exactly.
No one ask any questions until I say so.
Exactly.
You know, otherwise you'll get more warm milk.
Yes. Well, on that bombshell, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to return with, I think, what will be one of the most consequential questions of our lifetimes.
Of our times.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this week's podcast, as ever, is sponsored by The New European, which, if you don't know, is a weekly newspaper which was launched very quickly after Brexit, very much anti-Brexit, and it's an actual newspaper and also a fantastic website. And we are one of the fastest growing media titles in Europe, which is wonderful news, not least in part because of the talent we've got, including Matt D'Ancona. So if you enjoy what you're listening to, Matt puts that down in actual words each week, which is a fabulous...
And if you don't, there are plenty of other people. Yeah,
we've
really
got
good.
Alistair Campbell's Weekly Diary, which is always entertaining. We've got fantastic Greer, Bonnie Greer, Tannick Koch from Germany, Patience, Will Self writes...
James Ball.
There's a ton of great cultural content as well. So if you're into the idea of Europe being a cultural entity, then we serve that as well with stuff that you won't read elsewhere, great exhibitions in Hamburg or museums to go and visit when you're next in Prague, etc., etc., etc. So it's, if you're a Europhile, I promise you, you're going to love it. And this week, I'm going to give every single new subscriber a special burgundy-coloured Bollocks to Brexit passport cover, which, trust me, are fantastic fun and look great at any border control you happen to be stuck at.
Break the ice at parties as well.
Definitely breaks the ice at parties. And you can subscribe from just £1 a week. So for £1 a week, you get the entire digital offering on our great website, and that's 7 years of archive as well. Or if, like me, you like to get your actual hands on the newspaper each week and get that delivered through your door, you can get that for just an extra £1 a week, and that's a 75% saving on the price at the newsstand. So do something positive about correcting the corrosive nationalism of UK media and become a new European subscriber. Just visit theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matts. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. Enjoy. So, Matt, only one real question has shaken me to my core this week.
Well, Sunak is preamble to the big discussion, when you sent it to me, I thought this is amazing.
Yeah.
But then I haven't been able to stop thinking about it ever since, when I've been meant to be thinking about, you know, Tory policies.
I'm exactly in the same place, and I haven't reached a conclusion.
No, I mean, I think we need to kick it about a bit. So shall we go to the... This is Trump.
Donald Trump.
Talking at a rally, I believe, in Iowa.
Yeah.
About a very unexpected issue. Should we play the clip?
Let's play the clip.
But if I'm sitting down and that boat's going down and I'm on top of a battery and the water starts flooding in, I'm getting concerned. But then I look 10 yards to my left and there's a shark over there. So I have a choice of electrocution or shark. You know what I'm going to take? Electrocution. I will take electrocution every single time. Do we agree? I will take electrocution.
Just to put it into context, he's described, I think it's because he was talking about electric boats, wasn't he, for some reason? And he's got it into his head that if a boat sinks and it's got an electric motor, everyone gets electrocuted. Yeah, but range? I'm not quite sure.
It reminds me of one of my favourite stand-up comedians, Jim Jefferies, said in the run-up to the 2016 election. The thing about Donald Trump is he's a lot of fun, right? Yeah. And at moments like this, it's hard to disagree because he obviously is a terrible man facing 91 criminal charges and so on. But what came into his head to think that on the campaign trail, it would be good to raise this question? And first of all, you go, what an idiot. But then you find yourself lying awake at night thinking, do I want to be eaten by a shark or electrocuted?
And also, I mean, it becomes quite profound, doesn't it? Because, you know, is a quick death in itself better than being eaten by a shark? Because I did think that if you went for shark, right?
Yes.
But you survived it. You would never have to buy a drink in town ever again.
There's that. However, I looked into, you know, because we always offer listeners data.
Yes, data.
Data. Only 9 shark-related fatalities in 2022.
Really? But how many death by boat power motor electrocution? None, I'll bet.
None. I mean, I don't have data on. But the traumatic fact is that sharks don't attack human beings on purpose because we're too bony.
Right.
Right? So, you know, never mind Jaws.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And Quint, and we're going to need a bigger podcast, right?
Oh, no.
They do it by mistake.
Okay.
Unless you attack them, obviously, which is different. But the problem is, what happens if they take a bite and go, you know, yuck.
Right.
I want a sea lion or a seal. And then you go off and bleed to death, which is not nice.
I see.
Or you die of sepsis or septicemia.
Unless you can do what everyone tells you to do when you meet a great white shark in the ocean, which is to apparently punch it on the nose.
Yes. I've
always been a bit
often.
Dodgy about
I've
that.
I've always thought that probably punching a bloody big shark on the nose is suboptimal. But
tried punching anything underwater, it's got all the force of a wet lettuce, hasn't it, by the time you get to
I have swum with sharks, and it is very wonderful.
Not with great whites, sure.
No.
What, in a cage?
No, in you know, with scuba diving and everything.
Have you really?
Yeah, and it's oddly serene because they don't they leave you alone if you leave them alone.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I've done it twice, and it's and I'm not, you know, by any means a sort of dangerous sports person.
So what would you then go for shark on the basis of that?
No, I mean, I'm still tending towards electrocution.
Right.
Okay, but yeah. Having taken a straw poll, I'm not sure I'm right, because, you know, electrocution is extremely unpleasant.
Yes.
And can take many, many, many minutes. And the idea that it's painless seems to me to be somewhat, you know, old Sparky doesn't hurt, seems to be somewhat belied by the evidence, right?
wouldn't the electricity spread out through the ocean?
Well, if it was in the water, I mean, we're talking about...
It's not
about
like being in a bath, is it?
No. I mean, if we're talking about the electric chair...
We need a scientist. We need Brian Cox,
you know.
Well, Brian, think if
about,
you're listening...
Think about books, is they're dead big. The only metric I can find on this is that so horrible is in death by injection, which is the principal use of means of execution.
Have we now morphed onto capital punishment?
Well, I don't want to get into the sort of cruel and unusual thing, but what interested me was that electrocution is coming back a bit in the States, because...
Back in fashion.
It's very 2023, yeah. Right? Because there have been so many botched chemical executions, and the punters...
Because they ran out of chemicals, didn't they?
And apparently it's been established beyond some doubt that it is far from painless. It's nice. Very, you know, yeah. It's like being waterboarded to death. Ooh. So... You get to I didn't know this. In a lot of states, you get to choose.
Wow.
Okay, so in Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
Yeah.
They say, what do you fancy, Matt?
And what would you go? Would you go for electrocution?
I'd still go for chemical because I can't believe it's...
I'm scared of needles, though, so I would go for electrocution.
That would be the last of your worries, believe me.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to sharks.
Just before we leave electrocution, you know the greatest line is of the guy, and it's true, this, about a fella called, I think it was Andrew French, being taken off to be electrocuted. And as the sort of curtain was opened and all the reporters were there, his last words were, guys, to the reporters, he said, guys, I've got your headline, French fries.
That is very good.
Yeah, it was good.
And that's grace under pressure.
And then he fried, yeah.
And then he did fry, which you do, and, you know, your head steams and your eyeballs pop out. Yeah. It's not very nice. But
to anybody still listening...
Anyone who thinks they've turned on to executioners are us, right? They haven't. This is the two mats. We're still talking about current affairs. But I think the difference between this podcast and others is that we do wrestle with the difficult philosophical questions. So I was still troubled by this. So I thought, right, I'm going to go to ChatGPT and find out what our future cyber lords have to say. And lo and behold, ChatGPT was a bit narky with me. So I said, what is the least painful form of execution?
Right.
ChatGPT comes back dead like HAL 9000 in 2001. Says, I'm very sorry, but I can't assist with that question.
What? Really? Ooh, God. Imagine if you're on death row and you're turning for guidance.
So I thought, well, I'll try and rephrase it. So I said, would it hurt more to be eaten by shark or electrocuted? And I thought, I wonder if ChatGPT will bite. And it did.
Yeah.
So here we go. Imagine this coming from, you know, the depths of artificial intelligence, right? Both being eaten by a shark and being electrocuted are extremely painful, brackets, do you think, right? And potentially fatal experiences. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so clever. That, you know, it's difficult to compare the two in terms of pain, as they are very different types of trauma. Yet, thanks.
Especially as I'm a computer.
In either case, this is my favourite bit. In either case, it's best to focus on safety and avoid situations that could lead to such outcomes. And this is the absolute killer. If you have concerns about your safety or the safety of others, please seek help and guidance from appropriate authorities. So that's what AI, which is apparently going to take over the world.
Well, Trump was right then in that
he
case,
was right.
Wasn't he? Because he was saying, I just wouldn't get in the bloody boat
because
it's going to go down and everybody's going to get electrocuted. That's
but
obvious.
Correct, but also I'm slightly less worried about AI now than I was a week ago.
Is there a serious element to this conversation, which is...
Really?
I think there might be. I was trying to dig for one. Isn't this part of his... Again, we talked about Farage's affability.
Yes.
But his ability to play off the cuff, to ramble, to do a stand-up set effectively in front of thousands of people and just throw a bit of politics in, just to keep the narrative moving, moving, moving.
No one in a bar in Michigan is talking about the Build Back Better Act.
That's right.
But they'll have seen crazy Trump on TV, some of them.
Yeah.
and said, did you hear what he did this time? You know, Sharker Electra. And 2 hours later, with the Miller, you know, glass wreckage in front of them, they're still talking, you know.
Yeah.
Dwight, you're talking BS, you know. It would be a lot better.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, so, I mean, let's call it a sense of humour. Let's credit him and say he's got a sense of humour and he can make people laugh from time to time, for better or worse. You look at our current crop of politicians.
Yes.
Both humourless buggers, both of them.
Yeah, I don't think either of them are going to win the, you know, Perrier Award.
I mean, neither of them could get a laugh
out
of anybody.
I think that both of them are worse than that, which is they're both earnest.
Yes.
And modern politics does not smile upon earnestness. You can be serious,
yeah,
but you can't be earnest. And both of them sort of have this, you know, right, everyone calm down because we're going to be serious now, which is just a killer.
Yeah.
If you're trying to reach out, even if what you're saying is something extremely serious about, I get that you're struggling, I get that you're suffering. You know, this will be Starmer's challenge in Liverpool at their conference, will be, can he connect with the way in which people are genuinely still feeling terrible about all sorts of things?
Yeah.
It's a big ask for him because that is not his, that's not his MO. He's an administrator. You know, he ran the CPS. He was Director of Public Prosecutions. He believes in rulemaking, rationality, lawmaking, all that, which is, of course, all good stuff.
Yeah.
But it isn't enough anymore.
And I wonder whether, and maybe I'm reaching too far here, but I wonder whether in 2024, we had a chat the other day about the new European and what a huge year 2024 is going to be, because it is...
Who's going to win the Russian presidential elections, for example?
Well, that's the biggest question.
It's a question on my mind.
Right. It could go either way, Putin or Putin. But it's going to be an enormous year. And I wonder whether people's thirst for entertainment somehow influences their thirst for proper government as well. You know, and they want to be governed by entertaining people.
Yes. I mean, there's a fantastic book that was written in 1975, I think, by a guy now dead called Neil Postman, called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And he was really looking at TV, pre-internet. But he said, the problem is that what's going to happen is that politics is going to become a branch of the entertainment industry. Mm. And it reads so prophetically now.
When was that written?
75.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's come to pass, yeah.
That you have a situation where Trump is talking about sharks versus electrocution.
Yeah.
And Holly Willoughby is addressing the nation as if she was a... you know, Secretary of State.
That's
talking
right.
about the resignation of Phil.
Yeah.
Are you okay? I mean, the kind of role swapping.
It's all merged.
You know, everyone says, oh, it's just like Reagan. No, it's not, because Reagan and Schwarzenegger were Hollywood figures who became politicians.
Mm.
Successfully so.
Yeah.
But these are people who are actually entertainers. You know, Farage and Trump and Bolsonaro, by the way.
Johnson as well.
And Johnson. They are showbiz.
Yeah.
That's what they do. And it says nothing good about the state of democracy that's proved now to be a very reliable way of winning.
Yeah.
Because entertaining yourself into power is a dangerous route.
But that, I mean, that opens up, and we haven't got time to discuss it now, but that opens up so many questions about our political system, which
yes.
is that if people are allowed to vote for the most entertaining guy on the block, and that becomes the way we kind of self... regulate, because our need to have a laugh is greater than our need to be secure and safe and have a good economy and all of these important things, you'd end up with something like Brexit, wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly. And we did, and you know, and might worse. I mean, it's interesting because after we had Michael Wolff on the program last week to talk about...
Very well worth a listen if you haven't listened already.
Check it out, because he's talking about his new book on Murdoch, but also about Trump and everything. I called someone I know in Washington who's a never-Trumper, and this person said, you know, apropos of what we've been talking about, that the problem America has now is that none of the founding fathers, as this person put it, were jokers, which is none of the founding fathers wrote the Constitution, 1784... I mean, they foresaw many, many, many problems. You know, there's genius in that document.
Yeah.
But the one thing they didn't foresee was that television and now digital technology would turn statesmanship into pure performance.
Yes.
And you have to ask, you know, it's so vulnerable Not, I mean, this isn't just the American Constitution, by the way. It's all political systems are now so vulnerable to this form of assault. And trust in politics is so low that it makes it even more dangerous, because people think, well, politics doesn't amount to anything. Mm. It's not going to improve my life. So let's go with the guy who makes me feel good, yeah, or who I might want to have round, or I might conceivably have a chat with, which is a very, very, actually a very poor test,
yeah,
of statesmanship. But it is at the moment, yeah, increasingly the test.
And I guess the last one here that you could point to who had a bit of both, I suppose you would say definitely Blair, maybe, yes, Cameron a touch.
A little bit, yeah.
But since we've had either clown or, yes, kind of straight man and buffoon.
You,
yeah,
know, the paradox is that Boris Johnson did more damage to the British political system through Brexit and then Partygate than anyone in, you know, recent memory. But he also, because that adds to the rust already sitting on the political system and diminishes trust, it makes the system more vulnerable to, yeah, people like him rather than less. I mean, I don't know if you saw the Channel 4 programme on Partygate this week.
I haven't yet, but I'm told it's brilliant.
It's brilliant, and it's sickening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it I really do recommend it to people, because it's a docudrama, well dramatised, takes some liberties, but not many, and interspersed with interviews with real people who did suffer, you know, indignities and huge fines in contrast, yeah, to the politicians. And you think, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
You know, it really is one of those, I always feel with COVID that there's a tendency to sort of forget about what happened and turn away from it. But it's good that the inquiry is now up and running. It's good that we have these things that remind us,
yeah,
of the liberties that they took.
It's good as long as something changes.
Well, that's the big question.
Change. Maybe Rishi can change that.
I mean, I think in COVID, he Sunak actually drew exactly the wrong conclusions, which is that instead of thinking, right, so now actually the state is going to have to do a lot more than it used to. You know, there he was with the furlough, which was the one successful bit of the whole, yeah, government COVID
reaction,
suite of, yeah, policies. Yeah. He hated it.
Yeah.
Hated lockdown, and came out of it thinking, right, we've got to stop this. It's time to contract the state, draw back, get out of people's lives. Well, that is not, sorry, but that's not the series of problems that are facing the nation now.
Yeah.
Did have anything to say about social care. Unbelievable.
Incredible. All right. Well, not the last time, I'm sure, we'll express amusement about this government. What didn't we have time to talk about this week?
Well, I've been moonlighting, having fun at the London Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
wonderful,
is terrific. And one of the things I love most, and, you know, there's nothing, if you're a movie nut, there's nothing more fun than, if you're not a movie nut, it must seem completely deranged, but sort of queuing, yeah, at 8 a.m. to go to a screening.
What's the highlight so far?
So far, I would say it's between the movie I saw this morning, actually, which is David Fincher's new movie, The Killer,
right,
with Michael Fassbender coming back as an assassin. Very cool, very good. Uh-huh. Smith's soundtrack, very, very interesting. And Sofia Coppola's Priscilla about Elvis Presley.
Fantastic.
Also, Emerald Fennell's new movie Salt Church.
I saw a good film in much less kind of austere company on Netflix called Reptile. Have you seen that yet?
Very good.
Benicio del Toro.
I watched that.
Did you on my
recommendation?
I thought it was a great old fashioned kind of thriller, cop thriller.
Really excellent.
Brilliant performance from him.
First rate.
Amazing screenplay and loads of great architectural shots, which always turn me on. Yeah,
it just, you know, really, really excellent.
The other thing we haven't touched on is GB News.
Well,
The meltdown at
GB News is extraordinary, and I suppose reflects a problem, which is, it's like a kind of, it's a baby version of the crisis that Fox News has been through.
Yeah.
Which is, how far is too far?
Yeah.
So they sacked Lawrence Fox.
Hooray!
Which, you know, I think they had to after the disgusting things he said about very good journalist David Evans. They sacked Calvin Robinson.
Which again, hooray, but I can't quite work out why they sacked him.
Well,
I
think he went on social media and said, you know, hands off Loza.
Right, okay. Fine.
Then the plot thickens because the cops go around to arrest Loza because of his alleged ULEZ.
So I've got a point on this, which is if they've gone round and raided Lawrence Fox's house,
yes,
and I've got no time for Lawrence Fox.
You'd have to have heart of stone not to laugh.
Absolute tosser, right? But if they've gone round and done that for inciting criminal damage against you, Les Cameras. Why have they not raided Ian Duncan Smith's house? Because he did exactly the same thing. He said, if people vandalise those cameras, I'm on their side because they've been lied to.
Again, you know, the gap closes, doesn't it? We think that GB News is out at the fringes and that people like Lawrence Fox are out at the fringes. And indeed they are. But there's someone who's a former Conservative leader.
Yeah.
Saying
promoting criminal damage,
the same, and it's not a crime when we do it.
Yeah, if you're sort of posh and respectable, it's not a crime. But if you're a sort of grubby weirdo on the fringes of media who's got an arsey reputation, then you can go and five coppers. I counted in the video that I saw five coppers raiding his house.
I mean, he will reinvent himself as a sort of thespian Alex Jones, won't he? We'll have a sort of ghastly InfoWars version. He's terrible and dreadful in every way and misguided and wrong. But he does have that kind of actor's energy.
Yeah.
You know, he'll disregard this as he's been rejected in the casting call, right?
Yeah.
And he'll come back with, you know, because
there'll be a crowdfund.
The means
as well.
Of production are almost zero cost now for the kind of thing he does. So he'll be back on YouTube or Rumble or something like Substack.
They
love being, I mean, they feed off persecution, these people.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that Russell Brand
is,
in his own way, feeding off what's happening to him.
Yeah.
And they're all piling in saying, well, it makes you think, you know, conspiracies and all that. It's a very, the sort of rules of the modern political game are very different.
I won't go into this in detail, but there's a great podcast called Philosophize This. I don't know if you...
I have heard it in the past,
And it's by an American student of philosophy. It's brilliant. So if you're looking for something a little bit even deeper than the two mats in terms of philosophy,
this is a great one.
The most recent one is about, and it's a fabulous episode, all about how our thirst for narrative is what's driving this constant news cycle that is so fast that none of us can pay attention to what is really happening, which is the bigger picture. And everything moves so quickly now that the bigger narrative about the fact that we've had 13 years of crap government and all of this, people don't latch onto it because it's all just bite, 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 bite.
It's like episodes of soap opera.
Yeah.
Little bits of nuggets of story. And it's very difficult because politicians talk about narrative all the time. But you're right. I mean, narrative can be lots of things. It can be the future of the nation, or it can be Donald Trump talking about sharks.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a different world in which we now live.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's make it part of the two Matt's mission, where appropriate, to try and take that bigger macro view of what's going on.
The big story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very hard to keep your eyes on the big story now.
Yeah. So, folks, as a quick reminder, we are going to, from next week, do a fantastic second episode each week, which will be a sort of Q&A where we answer any questions you send in. And the email address to send in your questions to the Two Matts is Two Matts, that's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S, at tnepublishing.co.uk. Two Matts at tnepublishing.co.uk. And thank you so much for all of those questions we've already had, and look forward to seeing what else you want to ask. Ask anything. A quick reminder of our special deal for all new subscribers to the fantastic New European, where you can read the great Matt D'Ancona every week and a plethora of star talent as well. Go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matts. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. And there's a link in the show notes. And every single new subscriber, will get one of our wonderful burgundy-coloured Bollocks to Brexit passport covers, which you can display with pride next time you're at a border queue. Thanks, as ever, to our producers, the third Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and also Ollie. Thank you so much, Ollie.
Ollie, you're going to have to change your name.
Yeah, and until next week.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.